Do you know why a ship floats and a stone cannot? Because the stone sees only downward. The darkness of the water is vast and irresistible. The ship feels the darkness as well, striving moment by moment to master her and pull her under. But the ship has a secret. For unlike the stone, her gaze is not downward but up, fixed upon the light that guides her, whispering of grander things than darkness ever knew.
But sometimes the lights shine just as brightly reflected in the water as they do in the sky. It's hard to say which way is up and which way is down. How am I to know which lights to follow? But that seems so simple.
The most important truths often are. But you must learn to discern them for yourself. I won't always be here to speak them to you.
You won't?
Come along. Mother and father are waiting.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Rings of Power with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to the Rings of Power on Amazon Prime Video. So sit back, relax, and let's chat the glory of the Second Age. And welcome. I'm Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and that song just gave me some chills. I love me some Bear McCreary. That'll
you
never ever get old.
I both.
Never get old.
Well, speaking of old, we are excited to be in the earbuds or over the sound waves of friends who have been with us for a long time as podcast listeners, our oldies but goodies. We adore you. But if you are new to Blake and myself, we wanted to just take a moment to formally introduce ourselves.
Hi, I'm Blake.
We know.
Yes, well, we have a company called Mary and Blake Media. It is a mom and pop podcast shop. We are not aligned with any of the major corporations or any of the major podcasting companies that do this kind of thing. We've created our own company and we're independent, and that's the way that we like it because we get to talk about the things that we love, and it will be an impartial and truthful, honest review of The Lord of the Rings and discussion of Lord of the Rings, but not just review and recap, but what we're here to do is help inform and educate and talk about filmmaking and all of the aspects that go into it. That is what we are known for here at Mary and Blake Media. And of course, we're just known for Mary's talent because she's just incredible.
So yeah, Blake and I are a married couple. We have two kids. We live in the tiniest state in the United States, Rhode Island. It's by the ocean.
It is not an island.
No, it's not an island, which is just so weird. And we're nerds. And we love talking about all things with fandoms and fantasy. And the thing that I want to just make sure you all know is that we are not the Encyclopedia Britannica, I'm aging myself, of
wow, that is
Middle Earth.
Mary.
We do not know every single little thing there is to know about Middle Earth. If you want like the hyper-focused, you know, we know every detail of what the orcs would have on their shield. Yeah.
Like there are nerds that are out there that have like lived this their entire life. Like that is like that's how Mary is with Harry Potter. Like
so what I yeah, but what I can tell you is that you haven't read all the books, right?
I have not read the books.
Okay. So
I read The Hobbit.
I've read all the books and we are huge fans of the movie.
Yes.
So we know those incredibly well. We're huge fans of the score that goes along with the movies. And so we know quite a bit, but I will say, if you are sitting here ever screaming into your phone, they messed that up, bitch.
Yeah, like there's a place for that kind of podcast.
But know that we're welcome. We're always welcome for your feedback.
Always. Absolutely. That's what we're here for. I mean, like, that's what Marion Blake Media is for. Like, that's why we created it, because everybody has a voice. But we are an accessible podcast for people that just like the show or like the movies and want to discuss the show as it is. We're not here to break down like this didn't happen in the books and this did that and this was in the appendices, and like, we're not there to do that. We're here to discuss the show as it is and how it's presented to us. Firmly believe in book is book and show is show.
Yes. And I will also say that this podcast is going to be explicit free, meaning if you have someone who is younger and you would not like to have a swear word said, we're here for you. Some of our podcasts are not that, but those types of shows lend to that. You know, we're talking House of the Dragon, for example. Yep. Very different content than there is here in this show. So this show, of course, is rated TV-14. As parents, I honestly think our 9-year-old could have seen this episode. So just know that if you do have young ones in the room, or if you yourself don't like vulgar language or anything like that, we are going to make it so that younger audiences could hear this in the background or could even listen along with it, because we know that there's several younger listeners who listen to some of our podcasts.
And
so hello.
And even though we have read the books and, you know, we have, Mary has read Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. You know, we haven't necessarily pored through the appendices. We don't necessarily know what's coming. So as a result, we're going to make this podcast spoiler free. I mean, relatively speaking, within context, of course, like we're going to talk about the things that happened in Lord of the Rings.
With movie context.
Yeah, with movie context.
But if it's books or appendix known information,
right,
we are not there.
we're not there yet.
So as I said, just know that that's where we're coming from, and if that floats your boat, we are here for it. All right, so that being said, this episode is sponsored by MinuteWithMary.com. It's your one-stop shop for all things beauty and skincare. And if you are on social media, we want to connect with you. We're very, very active on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Just search Mary and Blake. All of our podcast episodes and other podcasts that we do are at MaryandBlake.com. And we would love for you to join our Facebook group. So if you want to meet fellow nerds, just search Mary and Blake on Facebook and request to join our group. Let's get into the show. This episode, of course, is the premiere, so we get a bit of backstory from the elves' perspective of what happened and how the Dark Lord Morgoth was defeated, and yet there's still remnants of Sauron throughout the lands hundreds of years later. So we get to hang on out with Galadriel through her youth, and then as she goes on missions, we get to meet lots of different characters among Middle Earth, not just elves, but man and dwarves, and also our
Harfoots.
Harfoots.
I got you.
Which
they're like,
hobbits.
I'm not going to say they're related to hobbits, but I feel like this is an early version of hobbits.
We're all saying.
Yeah, sure.
And at the very end of the episode, a meteor crashes and there's a man inside.
Mm-hmm. That's how it goes, baby.
And that is the mini plot recap this episode.
Well, this episode was entitled A Shadow of the Past, the first episode of this, what is rumored to be a billion-dollar show.
Can you believe that?
But I have some thoughts on that. We're going to discuss that in a little bit here. But A Shadow of the Past, directed by J.A. Bayona. Now, this director is actually kind of a big name, Mary. You actually know some of his work, as a matter of fact. He directed Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom.
Ah.
And he directed the show Penny Dreadful as well.
You mean he is responsible for that dying Brachiosaurus as they are pulling away from the island and the volcanic ash is up in the air?
Yes, that scene that will never leave
your eyes. Our daughter has never cried so much in her life.
And then he also has directed, what he's most famous for is the movie The Impossible. He's also directed some other stuff too, but it's just lesser known projects. And While we're getting into this, Mary and myself, like we talked about, the filmmaking aspect itself and the purpose for talking about the director and eventually the writers is to make connections to other projects and things and how all of these projects come about and certain styles and why we talk about these things the way that we do, because filmmaking is important to us and the art of filmmaking and who does what is important. So that's why we bring that up. And in terms of the writers, we're looking at Patrick McKay and J.D. Payne. You don't know those names. I know you don't, you nerds out there. And Mary, I definitely know that you don't know those. And I'm not saying in that bad way. I just know you don't, because I didn't. And I'm a wicked dork about this stuff. These two gentlemen are actually, they've been a tandem, a writing partnership for the past 20 years, but they don't have many major projects under their belt. However, they are uncredited temporary writers for the movie Star Trek Beyond, which was actually the latest Star Trek movie to come out with Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto and all those guys. And also, they have written for Disney's Jungle Cruise, which was the movie starring The Rock and Emily yes. Blunt. And they're actually currently working on the upcoming Flash Gordon remake that is being developed by Matthew Vaughn. So they have somewhat burst onto the scene the same way that D.B. Weiss and David Benioff did when they catapulted to fame with Game of Thrones. J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay are somewhat doing the same with The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power here. And I bring up Game of Thrones for a reason, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Now, Mary. Mm-hmm. Part of Mary and Blake Media, too, is we give a rating for every episode and for each outfit that we do or for every show that we cover. We do it in 1-5 fashion, and we do it based off of something that comes through the show. For example, The Last Kingdom, we did Shields. For House of the Dragon, we're doing Flames. And when we did Game of Thrones, it was Dragons. In this particular case, Mary, I think we should do Rings. Because it's the Rings of Power, and you know what? Screw it. We're here.
Yes, I love it.
Let's do Rings. So how many rings are you giving this episode, the first episode of the Rings of Power?
I'm giving this episode a 4.8 rings on a scale of 1-5. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
All right. So another idea here for you too, listener, is that we rate each show within context, right? So a 5 of Rings of Power isn't necessarily a 5 of House of the Dragon, or a 4 of House of the Dragon isn't necessarily a 4 of Rings of Power. The rating system is based on how good of an episode it is that the show is presenting us through itself. So having said that, I'm going to give this episode 4 rings for me. I'm on board. I am liking it. I liked it better the second time that I watched it. I feel like that's probably because there's just so much information coming from this world that it's too much to watch all at first. Now, the good, the bad, and the great. This is another segment that Mary and I do. Well, we like to talk about the good stuff, the bad stuff, and the great stuff. And we talk about one thing at a time. So Mary, what's your good, your bad, and your great from the first episode?
My good is just that this show looked stunning. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, friends, if you're new, don't you worry. I'm going to get more specific as time goes on. But I just need to get this just known that this is one of the most stunning premiere episodes of television that I've ever seen. Mm. Watching it on different screens still gives it justice, but I will say that if you can watch it on a nice high def big screen, you're going to be thankful for it, because it does feel like a cinematic experience.
Yes.
My bad is the mean kid elves. What the heck?
What do you mean?
The punks throwing rocks at the swan boat.
Oh, okay.
What's wrong with these kids?
Yeah, like, why are you going to be mean? They ruined the girl's boat for nothing, out of nowhere.
And this was just supposed to be this happy, perfect place. I just don't understand why these elf kids there would have been so cruel.
There's no evil in the beginning. I'm calling bullcrap.
Yes, yes.
That was straight up evil.
My goodness, they should have been kicked out right away. And then my great is Bear McCreary, the composer who orchestrated all of this music that we hear.
Oh, yeah.
Not only is it in my opinion, some of the best work he has ever done. And we've been able to follow a lot of Bear's work through Battlestar Galactica and
The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead, and of course, Outlander. And he has just done such an incredible job. If you have not yet downloaded and listened to the soundtrack, you're doing yourself a disservice. And if you are a person who uses Amazon Music, which I assume you do since you're an Amazon Prime person to watch this show, Bear actually released CD, like, not CDs, albums.
You are definitely dating yourself today in this podcast.
Oh my goodness gracious, I'll make you a mixtape. Bear dropped albums for each of the episodes. So not just the regular album, the season, but each episode has so much music to it that they each have their own album, which I just think is incredible. So do yourself a favor and listen to it. It's outstanding.
I love, you know what, Mary, just for that. Yes, that's right, ladies and gents. We actually do have sound drops in this podcast. That's what we do at Mary and Blake Media. We don't do them often, but we do, and it's fun. It adds another level of another layer of good stuff for each podcast. Mary, Bear McCreary, I totally agree with you. He's so good. His Outlander stuff is great. And this particular album, the season-long album for Rings of Power, it's really cool because it has a lot of great notes that combine both Outlander and what I think is his seminal work in Battlestar Galactica. Even though that was very early on in his career, his BSG work was just, I mean, chef's kiss. So the fact that we're able to take that kind of ethereal feel and that epic feel from Outlander and then combine that with this almost bombastic but mysterious feel from BSG, just and you really get that sense from even the top of our intro, and when the stranger arrives, you get that real big BSG feel. But when the theme for Galadriel plays, you're getting an Outlander feel. So I really like that. Okay, my good, my bad, and my great. So first, the good. There's a lot going on in this premiere. And how could there not be? The Tolkien universe is expansive. I mean, expansive is not even the word. It is encyclopedic, okay?
Hey.
And the writers, I think, Payne and McKay, I think they made a smart choice in not dumbing down the material, but just giving us a very clear goal. And through the main character. And that is Galadriel appears to be the main character, and the one single defining aspect of her life that we're really focusing in on right now is the fact that her brother died and was killed, and she is taking up his mantle and going to seek out Sauron and destroy him. That is a very basic, very tropey, if you will, central figure. And that's important because that grounds us in this vast cornucopia of a world where we could get lost very quickly between all the different places, all the different characters, all the different houses, and it's enormous. So I'm glad that we have a very basic premise to at least begin and introduce ourselves to the show. The bad. towards the end, when Galadriel is off to Valinor and they're going to go into the mists and live forever, and they're on the boat and they start hearing the chorus as they're chiming in or as they're zeroing in on Valinor, and all the other elves just start singing out of nowhere. And I was looking at that saying, wait, when did this turn into a recital?
You know, I felt that way too when I watched it initially, but on a rewatch, you hear, I think it's when it's Elrond who says it, or someone, one of them says about the boat ride and all of this greatness that's going to be happening to them, that you'll be singing a song that you didn't even know you knew.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it gotcha. Is a thing, but I agree. I think it was so quickly said that probably a lot of people had that same reaction. It made me think of my old days at church when some of the churches didn't have hymnals. Some of them just had, like, you knew the song, or maybe it was on the screen, but there's no notes when it's on a screen, when it's on a projector. And I was like, Galadriel, like, everyone's singing
What happened? Yeah. Who, what are the words? You know, like, that's what I felt. And it just, I felt like it came out of nowhere. And I was overwhelmed by it.
But as I said, it is spoken inside the episode.
Sure, sure. For my great, though, and again, this is kind of a broader perspective, but the fact of the matter is, the visual language of the show is very reminiscent, if not a direct copy of the visual language established by Peter Jackson in The Lord of the Rings and you know, tangentially, the Hobbit. I like this because if we were presented with a world that was so very different from what The Lord of the Rings established, it would be very jarring, because the show has this very interesting role to fill, right? It has to be independent of the movies, and we'll get into why in a little bit. But it also has to acknowledge the fact that The Lord of the Rings was a cultural phenomenon. It was basically a zeitgeist. I mean, it changed filmmaking in many different ways. And it helped define the fantasy genre. It was the first big breakthrough fantasy element of filmmaking that, like, you know, that became part of the monoculture, right? Mm-hmm. So it has to acknowledge that. It has to acknowledge the history of its predecessors at the same time. And because it was part of our monoculture, it established itself in our psyche. It established itself in our expectations. And so when we go to Middle Earth, we expect a certain warmth, and we expect a certain sharpness and colorization and saturation. When we don't have those things, and if it started presenting itself in the form of, like, the way that Game of Thrones does, you'd be like, hey, whoa, like, this is way odd. And it's not just in the look or the sounds, although they are similar. Like, even Bear's score, it's reminiscent of Howard Shore's score. But more importantly, it's the structure of what these episodes are giving us. As a matter of fact, the prologue that is monologued by Morfydd Clark, who plays Galadriel, right? The whole prologue is essentially a shot-for-shot remake of the prologue that was given to us by Cate Blanchett in The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And that's really cool.
Well, Galadriel just loves to have monologues. That's just who she is.
So the fact of the matter is, the show is relying on The Lord of the Rings in a very heavy way, and it's important that it does so, because it has to establish the connection in our brains, that relative transference that we have from Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit to The Rings of Power, giving us that language establishes a comfort level that we get to be thrown into that world as it's already happening, but we already feel safe and we already feel balanced in our viewing experience. I know a lot of people feel different ways about it, but at least the filmmaking aspect of it, that is what it accomplished, and that's my great.
Awesome.
All right. Also part of Marian Blake Media is that, again, as we have said, your voice is just as important as ours, if not more. You have a platform, and what we like to do is we like to give you the platform. And in this particular case, we take all kinds of feedback from people at Facebook, over at our special group, jointhenerdclan.com, or if it's on Instagram, or we even take voicemails. We're going to play them here for you right now. If you want to send us a voicemail for future episodes, you can just go to marianblake.com, click on the voicemail button, and then you'll be able to send it right there. For this show, Mary, we're calling our little feedback segment The Fellowship of the Ring.
Strangers from distant lands, friends of old, you shall be the Fellowship of the Ring.
All right, the first one comes from Kyle Ann Crawford. She says, this show was cinematically beautiful. Good character building. I need to rewatch because I wasn't riveted yet. Though, 3.8 rings. The next one comes from Allison Fisher. She says, I would give this first episode 4 rings. It was a bit slow, but absolutely gorgeous. I'm not comparing it to anything. I just want to say that I'm watching it and it's beautiful and it's just for itself. If anything, like I said, it is gorgeous. I'm liking most of the characters so far, she says, even Galadriel, because I'm waiting for her character growth. In this particular instance, this is the young, brawny, headstrong Galadriel, who hasn't had the tempering of the last 2,500 years to settle into herself, which is the one that we see in The Lord of the Rings. I'm not yet loving her, but I'm looking forward to her journey. Also, the stranger, a very cool way to introduce the character.
Jamie Brown said that it was okay, I guess. Dialogue was awful, but looked okay in places. I don't like the Harfoots at all. Boring. Personally, Jamie Brown gives us a 3 out of 10. So I guess if we really brought that to the scale that we do,
that's kind of like a 1 out of 5. Yeah, sure. One
hoping it improves as the season goes on, says Jamie.
So yeah, Mary, let's talk about this real quick. The widespread, I mean, I am shocked at how wide of a range the reviews have come in on Lord of the Rings. Oh, I'm sorry, Rings of Power. Why are you not shocked?
Oh my gosh, because this is post-COVID, my friend, and I just feel like everyone is a keyboard warrior right now, and people want to be very strong about their opinions. And
sure.
We've all taken stances on something over the past several years, mm-hmm. and we've kind of gotten used to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, sadly, it has become in many people's culture now to pick sides and to be very strong.
Sure.
Strongly opinionated, and to voice those strong opinions. I will tell you that most likely if you watch the episode a second time or more, like myself, you're going to like it more and more.
Yeah, I agree, because that's how it happened for me. At first, when we first watched it, it was just kind of overwhelming because we both watched it at the same time. We both watched that first episode and we said, yeah, okay, like let's do it. And then it was just a lot. On the repeat viewing, it felt better. But I think a lot of the trouble, Mary, is the kind of education and understanding of what the Rings of Power is supposed to be and where they're coming from. For example, I think a lot of people expect it to be just like how, you know, Tolkien wrote it, like either J.R. Tolkien or his son, Christopher Tolkien. But it's not the exact same because Amazon only purchased the rights to Lord of the Rings, the appendices, and The Hobbit. That's it. They can't do any other. They can't make any mention of any other works in Tolkien's universe. So they can only go by what was provided in those particular instances, right? And having said that, part of the deal that Amazon did was that it had to keep this show separate from the film. The Tolkien estate would not sell the television rights to Amazon if they made it a direct prequel to The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. So it has to be independent of those films.
But, like, what does that mean? Because,
like, you can't use the same, actors. You can't use the same score.
Okay.
Right. You can't say.
But you could say the same words.
But you can say the same words because those words were included in the Lord of the Rings book, in The Hobbit, and in the appendices.
Okay. So right? Anything that was unique to the movie that wasn't in the book, we can't use.
Yeah, because the movie. So if they made something up, for example, like they couldn't use the character that Kate from Lost played. Mm-hmm. In The Hobbit, right? They couldn't use her because that was made up.
And they
up
can't use Howard Shore's music.
They can use Howard Shore, but they can't use the music from the score that he created for, yes, Lord of the Rings. Correct. So that's why there
so
is...
So people are sitting there saying, why isn't the same music? You know, it's right. Because legally they couldn't.
They can't use it because that was part of the film. So they can make it inspired by the film, and they can take some of the things that happen in the appendices and say, like, okay, this happens here. Like, the stranger shows up at this time. And, you know, the Celebrimbor did this at this time. And then, you know, something else happens and the Sauron is defeated. Okay. Well, they have these guiding light points and then they have to fill in the guiding light points with the show. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. So that's what Amazon purchased and how they're creating this show based off of the information that they have. And they purchased these rights from the Tolkien estate for $250 million.
Wow.
And it's rumored that this show is a, you know, its budget was $1 billion. Now, producers of the show have come out and now said that that number is not accurate. Though part of the deal for Amazon was that they committed to 5 seasons. And if you do the math, if you add up the $250 million to buy the rights, and then how much it would cost to create 5 seasons worth of television, that would probably get you to $1 billion total. Mm-hmm. So my feeling is each season probably cost $200 to $350 million, which is not banana land money when you consider a show like Stranger Things was $200 million or $250 million. You know, House of the Dragon, $200 million for the first season. And you start talking $300-$350 million of Jeff Bezos's money. That's not banana land. That seems about right.
Yes.
So I think the total investment's probably $1 billion, maybe a little bit more.
Okay.
So that's probably where that number's coming from.
Awesome.
So yeah, and the fact that Amazon even has this show is because Jeff Bezos, when he was watching the whole thing with the Game of Thrones, he's like, I want my Game of Thrones. And that's what he set out to do. And he did it. And that's why I brought up Game of Thrones earlier, because not necessarily because House of the Dragon is premiering alongside or concurrently with Rings of Power, but because Bezos himself, the owner of Amazon, said, I want Game of Thrones. Go make that. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of see where
make the equivalent of that.
You can kind of see how that happened. I mean, the fact of the matter is he brought in these two unknowns to be the showrunner. It's the same exact thing that HBO did with Game of Thrones, although they started off much more with a lot less money at the time. So that is that. All right. That's enough history of the Rings of Power and how we all got here. Mary, your thoughts for the rest of this episode. What else stands out to you that you think is worthy of chatting about?
Oh, man. There's just so much. It was such a bold and expansive episode that actually when Blake and I were planning this podcast, we originally had thought that we were going to cover episodes 1 and 2 together, as that's how most of us watched it. Amazon dropped the first 2 episodes together, which is great and lovely and super wonderful. Thank you. But there's so much to cover that we decided they each needed their own. And for our friends who do watch this in the future, hello, how is the future? they're not going to be watching it at the same rate that we are in live time. So in this particular episode, I wanted to talk about the different, there's like 4 different character places, kind of groups that I wanted to chat about. And I thought that that would kind of be okay that we follow them along. The first one being, our lovely elf queen, Galadriel.
Okay.
So she starts off, as I said, in the beginning with these jerk kids.
Jerks.
I didn't like this scene and I didn't understand the purpose of this scene, because we're talking about a wonderfully happy, glowing place, and then there's these jerks. Why couldn't it just be hide and seek and the other things they were doing and have her do this little swan boat, which, by the way, is super cool because in A Lord of the Rings, she comes in on a swan boat.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Look at you.
Yes. So I just didn't understand the reasoning behind this, and I didn't know if you had any thoughts of why the kids were jerks.
Yeah, you know, it's probably there to help give you a visual representation of what she's actually talking about, that nothing is evil in the beginning, and then things happen.
Except that kid.
Except that jerk kid.
And in my opinion, that jerk kid is the soldier that stands up to her when they grow up. That's what I've made in my head canonically. The one that leads the little revolution.
Yeah, you know,
and
he's
always giving her the side eye.
Good thinking, Mary. I like
Thank
that
you.
Idea. I like that
Thank
idea.
Thank you.
And you know, too, I mean, structurally, it's there. This scene is there to set up, you know, her relationship with her brother, obviously, and her brother has to come in and give her the advice, which then is then paid off at the end of the episode when she chooses to jump off the boat.
So she's there, of course, with her older brother, Finrod, and as he's giving her this advice, he's telling her, I may not always be here. Right. And I thought that that was quite interesting because they didn't even have a word for death.
Right.
There wasn't even a known thing. And yet Finrod knew that he may not be there at some point.
That there was at least a possibility.
Yes.
Yeah. That's an interesting take too. Because why would he bring that up unless he knew that there was conflict coming? Mm-hmm. And not necessarily that he knew it was coming, but he could sense it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's nothing saying that he wouldn't be able to sense it. Right. And,
or if he was just knowledgeable of it, because right. This family is very high up in the elven community. They're mm-hmm. pretty much royalty. And so he is older. I'm wondering just how does he have more insight? You know, he leaves and he still kind of looks the same age. So I assume maybe they had an inkling of something that was coming up when he had to say that to her. And then we, of course, do a nice big time jump. And he's fighting.
Right.
And he's fighting, and they say that, you know, he yells out this, I think it's like Fur Verante or something when he's in battle,
mm-hmm.
and it says something like, you're going to die, or death is coming. It's something like that, which is really neat. I love how they use the different elven languages, and sometimes it's translated, and sometimes it's not.
Yeah, right.
Because we put on closed captions for yes. one of our viewings, because sometimes it sneaks it in that way, and you figure it out, but that one didn't.
No, did not. And again, the prologue here is very similar in style. As a matter of fact, this was almost a matching shot to when Elrond was fighting at the end of the Second Age mm-hmm. against Sauron. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just a cool visual reminder. So at this point, we're referencing back to the end of the First Age, but you know, in the Lord of the Rings, they're referencing back to the end of the Second Age.
Dark Lord Morgoth is mentioned as being defeated.
Yes, and that's all they can really talk about.
But it's not happening on screen. It doesn't happen on screen. I have been taught not to trust that situation. And it's interesting because they talked about how, you know, in that just kind of prologue time, how he came into their world and sucked out essentially the light from the tree.
Right.
That their tree was their source of light. And I do know that he and the one of the ancestors of the spiders, you know, the spider that catches Frodo and wraps him all up.
Yeah.
He and the spider do this.
Okay.
And they take it away. And that's why these trees play such an important factor now in Middle Earth, as not only is it a piece of their homeland, but it's, you know, the health and love and light that the elves are bringing into this world.
Interesting.
So Galadriel, of course, then she goes, it's time jump. She's older. She is leading the troops. Once again, of this high position, and they head on over into the Northern Wastelands, and this is where we get that epic troll fight, which I know some people hated on, but I loved it. How did you feel about the snow troll?
It kind of reminded me of the troll from Harry Potter.
You're a wizard, Harry.
With the troll bogeys. Mm-hmm. Of course, not that dumb. But, you know, for an episode, it needs to have some kind of action, and when you are world building to this capacity, there's so much exposition. Basically, the entire episode, everybody's talking at you. Everybody's talking at you as the viewer to give you the information to catch you up. And there are many circumstances where it's done artfully and creatively, and then there are circumstances where it's not. But you have to balance it with something. And the troll sequence at least gives you some information that you wouldn't necessarily be able to see unless you had it.
Mm-hmm.
You could be told it, but it wouldn't be as effectual. And that is how bad, I mean, I'm talking bad news bears, Galadriel really is. She
Meaning tough cookie.
Oh,
don't
yeah,
mess like, with her. Not that she's evil.
No. Like, that's a bad woman right
well,
there.
Well, I think we need to be careful with the word bad, because I will say that when you're in this Lord of the Rings universe, bad is bad and good is good. Very rarely are there in-betweeny characters like Saruman, for example, where you can have this little
line. How incredibly talented and gifted Galadriel is. Mm-hmm. She really is. And this is in stark contrast to the Galadriel that we are shown in The Lord of the Rings. So I think that's important. It helps recontextualize everything that we see in Lord of the Rings. And it gives you a stepping off point for this character, knowing how determined and incredibly gifted a fighter that this person is. So that when she does command these guys to walk through the snows and find these people, and like you have an understanding that, yeah, she has it under control, and her authority isn't backed because she's just, you know, given the title. She's earned it and she's made it, which makes it that much more heartbreaking when the rest of the elves put their swords down and say that she's going to go alone.
Thorndir. As I said, I'm just pretending he is the kid that broke it. Having her brother's dagger is quite important to her this entire episode. And probably as we go forward, you know, she took it off of his corpse and we see her carrying it throughout the series. And obviously it's with her when she's on the boat. We'll talk about her interactions with Elrond in a little bit. But, of course, at the end, she makes the choice not to carry on with the boat, but to jump off the boat. And I have a question. Were you under the assumption that she saw the comet when she jumped sometime in the water, that anything from the comet made her jump? Or does the comet burst out and she doesn't see it because it happens at the same moment?
That's a great question. There's no evidence showing that she saw the comet, right? Because as she's going into into the light, it's almost blinding, right? It's so blinding that the people ahead of her have already been enveloped by the light. And there's no moment of pause that suggests she even looks up at all. So my guess is that she does not see the comet, because there's nothing suggesting otherwise. And if that is the case, does the comet happen because she didn't see it?
Did she fan the flame?
Right.
Does the comet happen because of her choice to jump off?
Right.
Does the comet happen no matter what? Maybe she didn't see it, but the comet was happening honestly at that same moment.
Right.
Or we're going to find out. All right, maybe we won't find out.
But since even if we don't find out, who cares, right?
I mean, we'll find out if she ever says, "Hey, I saw a comet." But I personally, the reason I ask is I didn't get the impression that she saw it.
Yeah, I did not get that impression.
As she is on the boat and she's looking at Thorndir and she's looking at her dagger and she jumps off, is in the water, looking back as the boat goes away. I didn't get the impression that she saw the comet.
No, and even if we don't find out if she did or didn't, even if we don't find out, or if we do find out that the comet happened because she did jump off or whatever, it's reasonable to expect in this world that her choice resulted in the stranger coming, right?
Or you can argue that the stranger coming was what gave her a gut feeling that she couldn't leave yet.
Yeah, so either way, like, it's reasonable to have that expectation.
It's chicken or egg.
Fair. And you would have to think that her choice will have some kind of effect on Middle Earth, and not by her, you know, actions later on, you know, from what we know what it is, but because she is such a powerful elf that, like, you would have to assume that there's going to be an equal and opposite reaction from, you know, whatever, wherever this person came from, right? For Galadriel's action, the one that we think that is going to be a giant mover of the rest of this show, the opposing force has to have some kind of reaction. Now, I'm not saying that the stranger is, you know, an opposing force, but is it safe to say that it, It could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
So moving on, that's really a lot of what happens with Galadriel. It's a lot of her own personal journey. But the one person that we do see her have a close relationship with is Elrond.
Hold on. Before we talk about that, I have to call out this one bit of line.
Yes.
This one bit of dialogue. The evil in here is so great that our torches give no warmth.
Holy smokes.
What a great line.
No, but I think that that's so important.
Okay.
That's how she finds which way to go. Because it's colder.
What do you mean?
Don't they say, like, how do you know where you're going?
Oh, because it's colder here.
Because it's colder here.
Yes, right.
And then what's interesting, of course, is the snowflake falls down and she has the water and it hisses and it shows Sauron's mark. But something else very interesting about the torches do not give any heat.
Mm-hmm.
This is how you know it's evil, because the torches are not even able to give off heat in mm-hmm. this space.
Yeah, right.
This is not in this story for no reason.
Oh, sure.
And so I want us as viewers to really keep a close eye on when things are supposed to be warm or hot and they are not. Or if people are suddenly saying it feels cold. It kind of reminds me of the Dementors in Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. I like it, Mary.
You're a wizard, Harry.
That's one of the first things that people feel. That's the thing that non-wizards, the muggles or the squibs, they feel it get very cold.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be interested to see how heat affects our characters going forward.
It's a Mary and Blake commandment. Okay. A Mary and Blake media commandment is that no shot or no line of dialogue goes unwasted. There has to be a point for everything. Always. If there is no point, it should not be in your show.
Agreed.
That's the whole idea. So you're right, Mary. Let's keep an eye. Let's keep an eye on this whole.
Let's keep a temperature.
Oh, I like it.
So, of course, the relationship that Galadriel gets to have in this episode is with Elrond. And I think it's really exciting for fans of Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. to see them in your youth. Even as I said, if you didn't read the books, and all you need to go on is the movies for this show.
Sure.
That's what we have, as we've said. So it's just interesting to know that these are the elves that will in the future be helping Frodo and be working with Gandalf and having this relationship together.
And forging the world, like Galadriel and Elrond. And seeing Elrond in this way.
Mm-hmm.
As almost like a note taker,
mm-hmm.
like, and that's another thing that happens too. Bilbo is writing his story at the beginning of The Lord of the Rings, and we first meet Elrond writing the speech.
Yes,
in the same manner. I think that's again visual language. Mm-hmm. This thing, something that we come to expect, and he's writing a speech for the High King of the Elves.
You know, I was thinking something as you said, Galadriel, bad, but you meant good.
Yeah.
Frodo offers Galadriel the ring,
and
freaks out and has evil talk and ends up saying, like, I could be the, you know, this dark evil person, this dark evil witch kind mm-hmm. of person.
Yep.
So it's interesting to note that she has immense power in her. And the other thing that I want you to know is, so Elrond's writing, and you're right, he's writing this speech for the king to give.
Right.
So he's...
Didn't Galadriel also say, like, and everyone will love me, like, something like that? That's an interesting quote. Again, we know that it has to be separate from The Lord of the Rings. We know that, the films. But they can take inspiration mm-hmm. from it. And you wonder if they're writing Galadriel's character almost as she is unlikable to everybody else. Mm-hmm. So that is one of her prime things that she wants from the Ring of Power, is to be loved.
Well, we don't see her have a partner or a family in the future.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, and I'm pretty sure this isn't something that's addressed in the movies, but I know in the story, Elrond isn't full elf.
He's half
elf. And I don't know if they said that in this episode, but how you do get to pick up on it is they don't let him into, like, the small council. He's writing his speech for the king, and he's so proud of himself. And then in come the Debbie Downers, those ladies with the veils on their faces who take all your clothes before you journey on.
Yeah.
They come and almost mockingly say to him that the king's decided he actually can't come to this small meeting.
Yeah.
It's only for fellow elven leaders. And so he's a little down about that. And that's to let you know that he is not seen on the same level as the people who are pure elf. He is obviously a politician and he does have high aspirations, but the community doesn't view him as an equal. And so I think this is really something special that he and Galadriel have, is they're both very unique in their own ways, and it may not always be what's expected of their paths.
And what you're getting a sense of, too, is that he is only a politician in this show at this moment. He's not a warrior. Yet, from the films, what I got was he was a warrior. Like, he was someone that you did not trifle with. He was a person to not be trifled with.
And he's the dad of Liv Tyler.
Right. And, oh, I mean, you can't. Oh, it's just, Arwen.
Who's going to be her mom? Are we going to see her in this show? That's going to be gracious.
I hope we do.
I hope we do, too.
And that will be interesting.
You know who I could do less with, though, is High King Gilgalas.
Gil-galad?
Yeah, exactly. God bless you. So I am not a fan of this king, and I don't know if it's the portrayal, the acting. I would say it of all of the characters, he was the most difficult for me to find believable, but that also might just be his personality, his elvishness, because they come off kind of stoic and boring, unless they're half elves, and then they kind of have personality. Honestly.
Sure, yeah.
But I don't like how he treats Galadriel. I don't like how he treats Elrond. And then when Galadriel does leave, and he and Elrond are there, and Elrond's so proud of himself that he was able to convince her to go, the king says, yeah, you know, she could have made it worse.
Yeah, we have seen that, you know, there was an instance where she brought the very evil that she's trying to fight, which, by the way, he's still not wrong, because she left the boat. She could still come back and do the thing that he is saying.
Yep.
Nevertheless, Mary, I kind of disagree with you on this aspect, in that I kind of get where he's coming from, where it's like, I'm the king and I have to watch out for all this stuff, and this girl's a troublemaker. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, there's nothing that is stopping her from going to the edge. And he's kind of giving me Cornelius Fudge vibes, where he's saying, like, he's not back, you know?
Yeah.
He's not back. And he's kind of avoiding it, and he's trying to convince everybody that, listen, it's been thousands of years since we've heard anything from Sauron. This guy ain't here no more. We found him. He's gone. Forget about it. Yet Galadriel seems to be the only person saying that he's not gone. Now, we know she's right, but at the time, the character of the king doesn't, and he has to move on with his life. He has to move on with his kingdom.
Maybe he just thinks that his reign will be done by the time that Sauron comes back, and at least he won't be blamed for it. And I love how he, you know, Elrond questions him, saying, wait a second, she was kind of right?
Yeah.
And then the king just switches gears. Oh, have you heard of Lord Celebrimbor or whatever?
Celebrimbor.
Celebrimbor. Thank you. The Elven Smith. And Elrond is just so excited and so flattered that he kind of forgets.
Right.
We call that
misdirection,
yes.
Or redirection.
And it is, of course, interesting that when we have the comet go across the sky and the king does see that, that is when a leaf from this tree falls. And not only does it fall, but he turns it over, and the blackness that we saw in the beginning of the episode spreads all over the back of this leaf.
And the blackness that is that resembles, or at least recalls, the cow.
Oh, the chocolate Southland, milk?
The chocolate milk.
That's how it's made.
No, that ain't chocolate milk. That's Yoo-hoo. That's chocolate drink.
Oh.
I don't know what that is, but it ain't chocolate milk. No, and then also, too, Mary, speaking of trees, when the comet flies by and the leaf falls off in front of the king, guess who else is shown during that sequence? The Ents.
Oh.
And
yes.
The Ents are like, they
and
the see
Ent
that
wives
comet.
And the Ent little kid.
Yep.
It's either a kid or a wife, but the Ent family.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
They like hold hand. They hold like
you weren't
tree
a
hands.
Big Ent fan.
I was out on the Ents.
But now you are.
Well, because I didn't like them just walking. It was like the one part of the Lord of the Rings where I was just, what are we doing? We spent half the movie walking with an Ent.
Are here for the Ents. We're here. But you're saying, just to continue to bring out the universe and flesh it out, that, you know, Nori essentially isn't the only person who sees this comet, she and the Elf King.
Right, right. So now that we bring up Nori, I mean, unless you have anything else to say necessarily, I mean, Celebrimbor.
Yeah, that was really it. It was just a kind of more of a exciting thing for Elrond and a shift of direction. I am here to talk Harfoots.
Okay.
We are introduced to the Harfoots, first off, by hunters walking by with giant moose antlers on their backpacks.
That's really cool. Really cool.
Very unuseful.
Is it backpacks or is that actually part of their body?
I didn't know if, like, what is the purpose of having moose antlers that are twice the size of you?
I don't think it's a backpack. I think it's part of them.
Oh. I thought, so at first I thought maybe this is to scare wolves because they say there's stuff here. There's only wolves. So I didn't know if they wore that to scare off other creatures that would see them as prey.
All right, fair.
And then the other thing I thought is maybe they killed the giant moose and ate it already.
Gotcha.
And then this is something they're bringing home to use as decorations.
But they killed, that's two of them. So they got two moose.
Or is it mice? No, it ain't mice. It's mooses.
Mooses. Mices.
But they say that there's zero to hunt. There's been too many wolves. And then they said, we got to get out of here because the Harfoots are nearby and they are dangerous creatures.
Yeah. And that's a great, great ironic statement when you introduce these characters as the Harfoots and they are anything but dangerous. They're just nomads and nobody's ever really seen them because they specifically stay away from the big people, as they call it. So for these hunters to say that like these Harfoots are dangerous creatures. Yeah. It kind of makes sense. But the subversion there is great because then you're introduced immediately to the actual Harfoots and they are just, again, a subspecies of hobbit, I suppose. The difference, of course, being that hobbits are stationary creatures and the Harfoots are just nomadic. They just go around and they live.
But we can see many of the similar characteristics in the sense that they're quite jolly, that they hang around with their families, that they love to eat and party.
Yeah.
So part of me just thinks they are the same things. And when they settle, they say, because hobbits and Harfoots, like maybe someone with an accent just says it.
That's, you know what? That happens all the time.
I know.
So that's a possibility. You know, the Harfoots, I think are...
When they popped up, when they said, oh, they're dangerous creatures, and then you see the Harfoots start to pop out, whether it's from the grass or the trees, it reminded me so much of the Lost Boys in the movie Hook with Robin Williams.
Yes.
It just all, totally. You know, like wearing these silly hats that look like nature, and I absolutely loved it. And I think, you know, people think about elves, not necessarily Lord of the Rings elves, but other elves and Christmas elves and little wisps and things like that. And those being a bit more nature and childlike. And so it's interesting to see the Harfoots actually being able to play that role that we love to have imagination about.
Right. The Harfoots are an interesting set of characters in this show because I think a lot of people are kind of like, what are we doing?
Well, we've got Nori. We've got Poppy, who's Nori's best friend.
Yes.
We have Nori's family,
yep.
Which she's talking to her mom and she's talking to her dad. And then the other character that gets the name is Saduk.
Yes. And he's like the elder that has the book and he's looking at the... And he says, oh, the skies are strange. I was going to play that at the top of our episode because that is, you know, reminiscent of... Or not reminiscent, but it's calling out the fact that things are happening around them.
I love the Harfoots. They may be getting hate, but I got to tell you, the characterization of these different races of characters and people, I love the differences of the how stoic and almost cold elves come off.
Yeah.
Like pure elves.
Yeah, and even within the elves, they have the two different kinds of elves, right? They have the Sylvan elves, and then they have the... then they have the Noldorian elves, right? And the Sylvan elves are the ones that are kind of like the army that are out there doing what they're like.
Like Arendir?
Yeah, like, yes, he's out there and that's one of those elves. And the other elves are the other ones that we see too. But yes, you're right, Mary. And they all have different accents.
Yes.
They all have like the high-end elves have like that posh British accent and like the Harfoots have the Irish accent.
And so I think you have to keep that in mind as you're seeing these characters. We are probably not going to have warm, fuzzy, cozy Galadriel. She will probably not meet Poppy or meet Nori and say, oh my gosh, you have blackberries? Yeah! hey, and squeal and run and get dirty. That's probably just not going to be her character.
Right.
Same with Nori. So we're getting, so for people who, you know, if you're watching this and you're saying, wow, I don't know if I like this character, you have to look at that society as a whole. You know, same thing with the dwarves. And as we move into other cultures, their culture is really defining how they act with each other. Mm-hmm. And as these characters get to meet each other, how they interact with them.
Right.
So I'm really interested because the Harfoots, they're just here to party.
And, you know, I agree with you, Mary, that they're here to party. And the fact of the matter, too, is...
And eat snails. And eat snails.
So, either way, I think the Harfoots are important, not because they're, you know, Nori discovers the stranger or whatever, but because they get to show you a more, how do I want to put this? Fanciful or whimsical side of this story. And for every dark and big and like super self-serious moment that the Lord of the Rings had, there was also a moment of levity, and there's also a moment of like relationship building. And it's important to have that, because if you don't have that, then the big things that are self-serious, when the things matter, you won't care about them if you don't have the relationship building from the fun light moments, mm-hmm. right? It's important that, like, when Sadak is reading from the book and he's like, things are going on here, and Nori pops up her head from, you know, behind yes. the book, and, you know, the characters are doing the things that they're doing, and there are these moments with you need to have to care about these people. So, you know, for every action that Elrond or Gil-galad takes, that has an effect on some of the populations that you may not be considering, that being, of course, the Harfoots.
That book that Sadak looks at first I thought it might be a calendar. I loved how he had the hunters written down, and he said, oh, they're not usually here by now. Mm-hmm. This doesn't make sense. So I didn't know if that was a calendar. But then after the picture of the moose antler guys,
yes,
were pictures of wolves in the calendar.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if that means that the wolves just follow the hunters, or if the wolves are just part of the hunters, like they all come and feast.
Yeah.
Or if that means that wolves are coming next, and if there's usually an influx of them. And we, of course, get to see a wolf or some kind of weird creature. It didn't look like any kind of wolf I know of, so I don't know if it's supposed to be that kind of a creepy dog yep. thing with a giant footprint. But that was super scary. And Nori is so kind and giving, obviously super naive.
Yes.
But she is so gentle and kind and protective. And I am so excited for this character because she's my Harry Potter.
Oh, absolutely. She is totally Harry Potter. But, I mean, nevertheless, at the same time we have this gentle, kind character, we have the men of the Southlands. And that is, I think, in direct response to how kind the Harfoots are.
Yes.
You know, the Harfoots aren't actually the creatures that are scary. It's really the men. And we have some issues here that... The Sylvan elves are the ones, they believe that the men of the Southlands are still poisoned by Morgoth and their relation to Morgoth before, you know, at the end of the First Age.
As I was watching this and realizing what these characters are going through, because yeah, exactly what happened is the elves watched over here. This is where a lot of bad stuff happened. A lot of people sided with the bad team, but they have to keep an eye. And it's been years since anything bad has happened, and yet still the elves police almost. You know, we have Arendir go in and ask the gentleman who owns, I want to call it the restaurant for lack of a better word, you know, what's been going on? Oh, nothing too much, just some poisoned grass. And it reminded me of even just... occupation that our military has had in lands that are not ours.
Sure.
And how difficult that has been as decisions. And I am not here to say what is right or wrong, but for Afghanistan, for example, mm-hmm. You know, we went over and we're occupying it and trying to give, we as the US, I mean, trying to set up some form of government and systems and things like that. And I'm not saying right or wrong any way, shape, or form, but I am going to say that obviously there were a lot of people who lived there who did not like it and did not approve of it, and were probably saying, listen, man, war's been done for a long time. Mm-hmm. And this happens throughout our world constantly.
Sure.
And people have to make the decision, how long shall we be policing people for?
Yeah. And at the same time, I'm certain that there were people that were kind of like the barkeep who was like, yep, okay, cool. Like, we're gonna do what we need to do, and we're gonna get along, and everybody chill out. Like, mm-hmm. there's some hostility here. Like that kid that was Theo's, you know, Bronwyn's son's friend, like that is a representation of one aspect of it. And then the barkeep is the other.
I'm gonna call that kid Justin Bieber. He has like the 2010 Justin Bieber hair.
Yeah, yeah. So there is some mystery about Theo's father and who, you know, where he comes mm-hmm. from. Nobody knows where his father comes from. And do you think they're setting up that mystery for a purpose? Like, is it Arondir? Like,
I want to know what his midichlorian count is, first off. Is he a Jedi?
Oh. You know what? Thank you. That's why we got married.
Is right your there. Dad the Force?
That's why we got married. is she I Palpatine hope, your grandfather?
I hope whoever his daddy is, I hope he was hot, because Bronwyn is the only lady in town,
and she's bringing
who
it.
Is under 70 and has all her teeth.
Yeah.
So for all of these people inside the restaurant, once again, lack of a better word, to be scoffing and blabbering their mouths, I think the reason that they all blabbered to Justin Bieber mm-hmm. is because they're all jealous. They all want Bronwyn because she's the only babe in town. They're all dirty. She's magically clean.
Yeah, right.
They all don't have teeth. She's got hers.
Yeah. And, you know, I had one issue with Bronwyn when Arondir is like, okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to check out this thing over at that town. She's like, okay, I'm going too. See you later.
And then she just leaves her son.
Just leaves her kid.
Goodbye,
see you
Theo.
Later. Bye. See you later. Don't even say bye to him. I'm just leaving.
Yeah, you're okay. Right. She didn't even say goodbye. She didn't give him a flipping peanut butter sandwich. Make sure there's an Instacart on its way.
Didn't even put lay the, some newspaper down.
Put on the Ring doorbell. Make sure that no strangers come. Nope. She just leaves Theo. And what does that say about the relationship? Now, mind you, Theo is an older teen.
Yes.
And does seem like he can take care of himself, although that kid cannot sleep. Mommy, there's mice. Right. Get some melatonin, okay?
And he gets himself into a little bit of trouble because he finds this sword hilt.
Okay.
With the Sauron's insignia on it.
So he brings Justin Bieber over to a farmhouse thing.
Yes.
I don't know where that house is. I feel like he referred to the owner of the building as a he. He will be here soon, or he is rich. He has all these goodies under this floorboard. Mm-hmm. But look at this special goodie. So I don't think that this was Bronwyn's garage,
sure.
for lack of a better word, once again.
Yeah.
It's a male person mm-hmm. who's got a bunch of stuff.
Maybe it was his dad's.
No, because he doesn't know anything about his dad.
No, I know. Yeah, but maybe.
No, because if that was his dad's, him and his mom would be using all that stuff.
Okay, fair enough.
He'd be like, this is my pops. Maybe it's the restaurant owners.
Yeah.
Whoever it is, I feel like it's a fella in town mm-hmm. that they both seem to know who that is.
Yep.
And then, of course, yeah, he takes out the sword, which has Sauron's mark on it.
Yep.
And does Justin Bieber get cut, or is he just kind of scared?
I think he gets scared.
Okay.
That's the way that I look at it. Are you buying Arondir and Bronwyn's obvious sexual tension?
I did not until my third viewing, because I did not like Arondir. I just wasn't feeling it. I thought that Bron was dressed a little too hussy, kind of like Megara from Hercules in Disney. Like, wow, look at you, sassy. No wonder people be talking about you and your teeth. But it was on my third viewing that I really paid attention to the personalities, extroverted, friendly, you know, all those traits of the different characters.
Yep.
And once I saw Arondir as the elf that he is mm-hmm. in that society, I'm okay with it now.
Yeah. And the fact that he's like going away from his commander's probably looking for him mm-hmm. and he spent 79 years there, and
she's the only person who's given him kindness.
Right. And which I think it, you know, speaks against the larger interpretation of the elves in that area and the kind of, you know, I don't want to say, well, yeah, actually I will say racism against them. in the Southlands, that speaks to a larger setup for that area and what's coming. Which again is why I say that this episode, I understand why some people thought it was boring. I even understand why some people thought that the dialogue was stilted. I get it. The problem is when you have somebody speaking at you for the entire time, that's hard.
There's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, there's a lot of ground to cover. Where the show really extends itself really well is Galadriel. Mm-hmm. And they made her a character that is a pivotal character, meaning they gave her something that she will go to the ends of Middle Earth for, and she will never give up. You know, that is a person that will kill to find Sauron and get him. And they gave us enough mystery at the end of the episode for Galadriel and also with the introduction of the Stranger to keep us saying, hey, whoa, what's going on here? Like, why would Galadriel do this? And why or how did the Stranger show up? And that is what I think every first episode needs to do. It needs to build the world and needs to give us a representation of what the show is going to be about. And that is going to be, of course, you know, the world of the Lord of the Rings. And it's going to be about the hunt for Sauron and Galadriel's expedition and how that is eventually going to tie to the Stranger and via Nori. And then how that is eventually going to tie to Bronwyn and Arondir in the Southlands and how this all circles around Galadriel. And if we have that, we have an understanding of what the show is going to be, and then we are presented with enough of a mystery of what will eventually happen, it's a successful first episode of television, in my opinion. Okay. Now, the key is, where do they go from here? Does the plot go off the rails, or do they keep it confined to a smaller group of characters?
Well, I have some ideas on that. But before we do,
yep,
I wanted to tell you about today's sponsor. In addition to podcasting about my favorite shows and books and movies, being a mom of two and a wife to Blake, I also love to play with makeup and skincare. I just find that it helps me feel more confident if my skin is healthy. I love that a little bit of concealer can make me look like I actually got a good amount of sleep. And I especially love that a little bit of mascara gives me some pep in my step. I feel like the Bronwyn of Rhode Island when I put on a little bit of makeup. And I say all this because I have a site, and it's called minutewithmary.com. And there I carry all sorts of makeup and skincare. So you can always go and check it out and shop there. But in addition to that, I give services where I want to help you find the things that are best for you. And I want to help teach you how to use different makeup and skincare products. So to do that, just go on social media and search the hashtag Minute with Mary. If you're on Facebook, you can request to join my VIP group. And you can always feel free to shop at minutewithmary.com.
All right, Mary. You got anything else for this particular episode?
Yes, I've got some theories.
Okay, well, you know what? Do you want to do your theories first, or would you like to do some trivia first?
Oh, I also had some other fun things.
Okay, what do you got?
I wanted to let everybody know where we went, because that map usage, very Indiana Jones.
And very Game of Thrones, too, yes, by the way.
Yes, to let us know where we are in this wild world. So we start off in Valinor.
Yes.
Okay, and this once again is for the non-super hardcore Lord of the Rings friends who know everything.
Yes.
Valinor is where we start. It's the Golden Elves' home where you go to die, but not really die. Then, in between Valinor and Middle-earth are the Sundering Sea.
Yes.
And then you get on over and you go west and it's Middle Earth. Now, Middle Earth to me just looked like a giant big thing in which there's different places inside Middle Earth. Kind of like Middle Earth is a continent. So then we go all the way up to Fjordwaith, who is the northernmost waste.
Yes.
Essentially, you know, the wall in in Game of Thrones. Then there's Lindon, which is the capital of the High Elves. So that's where the king lives, and that's where they have their new yellow magic tree,
yes,
which just lost a leaf. Then they say to the west is the Southlands, which is a little confusing, whatever. And that's, of course, the Lands of Men. Lands of Men don't really get that many cool. That's another big just kind of swath of a place. And then there's Tir Ahad, which is where Bronwyn is, where Theo is, where the Well is, yes, where Justin Bieber is. And then there's Hordun, which is where the sickness, the poisoned grass situation, yes, is happening. And so those are the places that we've been in this episode.
Okay, very good. Very good. Just a moving of the map, if you will. And yes, you're right, Mary. Very Indiana Jonesy, very Game of Thronesy. And it's actually a really good thing, again, basing stability in this story. The fact that we're able to see a map, travel through the map, and actually see physical representations of what the map would look like, but just via camera is, yeah, really special.
My favorite musical moments. That's another thing that I wanted to have in each episode.
Yes.
Because, as I said, my great was Bear McCreary. He poured his heart and soul into the scoring
and
of
Mary
this.
Mary is a musician.
Yes. Oh, yes, I am. Hi. I have a Bachelor of Music. And, you know, doing a little research on Bear, I haven't found a nice long interview with him yet. Bear, if you'd like us to interview you, we would be more than happy to. But what he did say in the little clippets that I found of him on the red carpet and whatnot is that he himself was a huge Lord of the Rings fan. Mm-hmm. Read the books and also watched the movies. And the movies were a giant, monumental piece in his life in regards to his own being a fan of film and scoring, and he loved Howard Shore's score for this, and he actually used to think, like, I hope one day I can score something as big and magnificent as this.
Right.
And so what he's done differently than we've heard Bear do in the past is he's created a lot of melodic lines that are very recognizable, and he studied a lot of other composers to help him along those lines. Some of the music that you'd hear with Bear, it does just kind of enhance the background, but isn't necessarily something you're going to be humming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's melodic,
like,
line that I'm talking about. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, oftentimes you think Star Wars. When you think Star Wars, what sound do you think?
Well, you think of French horn.
Like melodic. Like things like that, or Harry Potter. So John Williams writes melodic lines.
Yes.
A lot of composers do. And so he kind of studied their work and decided, I'm going to make up my own melodic lines that are very specific for situations, but especially for characters. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to be hearing those melodic lines for those people. And some of the ones that really stood out were Valinor, it's the elves. There's going to be a lot of choir and strings playing at that point. Mm-hmm. Elrond, which is really neat, is it has kind of an oboe and clarinet aspects to it, and it made me just think of Forrest Gump. the music for Forrest Gump. Galadriel has that brass,
yep,
has that really soaring, heroic French horn, and yet he carries that same melodic line, and then it becomes used with more gentle instrumentation as it's pieced throughout. But my favorite piece, maybe you can bring it on up, Blake, is the piece that is playing with the Harfoot. And it's when Nori is speaking to her mother, and she's talking about, oh, mom, don't you just wish, you can actually probably just bring it up, yeah, in the show, when Nori is speaking to her mom.
Here, I'll bring up Nori's theme right here. Hold on.
So we're hearing the plucking of the strings and percussion.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start to hear, of course, the flute, bringing kind of this Celtic flair.
Oh,
and
yeah,
of course the Harfoot have an Irish accents.
Yes.
So you're going to hear a lot of Celtic inspiration with the Harfoot character. Or, yeah, with all of the Harfoot characters.
Yep.
This, of course, whimsical and light and bouncy. And our son was listening to it and he said, it sounds mystical, which I thought was a quite interesting thing. And then we go right into adding more Celtic instrumentation by having a bagpipe.
Yes.
And what I like about this is almost more maturity. It's a bit more bold of an instrument that we're using to carry. Still the same melodic line, but that da na 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 na, that's going to be Nori. So you're going to hear, here we go again. So this is Nori's melodic theme. And as you continue to listen and watch these episodes, this little bit, which will get stuck in your head, is for Nori.
Gotcha.
And I love that it's interwoven. So as you do these rewatches, this is her theme.
Yeah, keep an eye on it. Keep an eye on it there, Marvin.
The other one that I would love for you to pull up, it was my runner-up, and I won't normally do a runner-up, but it is Galadriel's.
Galadriel?
Galadriel.
Okay. That's actually the song that we use for our advertisements, I think. Nope, we don't use this one, sorry.
You hear, of course, this choir kind of singing, and this is always used, from what I can tell, when it's elvish.
Yes.
Like, there's lots of these, you know, high choir, long voweled. This right here.
The French horn.
This is the melodic line.
Yep.
And we've got this French horn usage. You hear a lot of French horn for strong, bold characters. French horn is used in Princess Leia's theme. It's the primary instrument that kind of starts things off for her theme, for example,
or
with
the
John
Force
Williams.
Theme.
Mm-hmm.
What's that? Is that the flute?
Yep.
Also?
Good job. Look
yeah,
at you.
I got you.
So you're getting this delicate instrument along with the strong brass. He adds in a lot more instrumentation to really fill it out. And I think just kind of to show us her power that is inside this being. And you're going to hear that just little, even just a few notes, a handful of notes playing that melody throughout these episodes whenever you see her.
Yep. So keep an eye on that one too. So those are Mary's two favorite musical moments, or at least two favorite themes so far from The Rings of Power. Well, Mary, it is time to do some trivia, as we like to do with Mary and Blake Mina. Just the little things that I think are important that are part of the Tolkien universe and how it is applicable to The Rings of Power. You ready to do it, Marvin?
Yes.
Let's do it. Oh, there it is. That's Galadriel's theme. I knew I had it in here somewhere.
You're going to keep hearing it. That little melody is going to get stuck in your head, I'm telling you. This is the one out of all of them that I have stuck in my head the most.
Oh, okay. All right, so the first bit of trivia here. In Middle-earth, the two kindreds, the firstborn elves and later humans, became estranged as each kind walked further down their sundered roads. From the Grey Havens, or Mithlond, the elves set sail into the west, never to return to Middle-earth. It is said that on the high sea, while sailing to the Blessed Realm, a sweet fragrance on the air and the sound of singing voices comes over the water to meet the elven ships. Then the gray rain curtain turns to silver glass and rolls back to reveal the white shores and a far green country under a swift sunrise.
Hmm.
Valinor is the land of the Valar, the angelic guardians of the world. Their land goes by many names, among them the Undying Lands, the Blessed Realm, the Eldamar, or the Uttermost West.
Or what I'll call it, the Land of the Yellow Tree.
Sure. While some humans fought alongside the elves of the First Age, not all did. Some consider these dark days and their records in the Middle-earth are few and brief. That is from the appendix. Different from the Eldar, the Sylvan Elves, or the Wood Elves, lived further east from the sea, in forest realms such as the Greenwood the Great.
So you think of Arendir and his armor that he has on?
Yes.
It has a face in it, but it also kind of looks like tree bark.
Correct. At the end of the First Age, Elrond was given a choice. He was one of the Peridil, or half-elven, and had to decide between the fate of the Eldar or of mankind.
He's a child of the relationships that Arendir's friend was warning him about, that there's only been a couple of successful ones.
Harfoots are a little people, and while the later hobbits ranged between the 2 and 4 foot tall, in their ancient days they were slightly taller. They were beardless, bootless, and browner of skin, as it's said concerning hobbits.
Mm-hmm.
And Gil-galad was acknowledged as the High King of the Elves of the West, for he was the last heir of the kings of the Noldor in exile. And Morgoth was known by many names, including the Dark Power of the North. His was a bitterly cold realm, and the snows linger still in Fordowaith, the long outlasting him, as we have seen in the northernmost waste.
Yes.
Trolls were made in mockery of Ents by the dark powers of the First Age.
Jerks.
Snow trolls are merely one variation of them that long ago adapted to the harsh climates of the cold northern realms they call home.
Very cool.
And long before hobbits became a single group of people whose ancient legends hardly looked further back than the wandering days, they were halflings called Harfoots. They were travelers of highlands and hillsides. Most of the details and collaborations told herein are derived from The Lord of the Rings, its prologue entitled Concerning Hobbits and the Appendices, A through F, where the intrepid traveler may journey to discover even farther horizons.
Yeah, you can get that book from the library.
Both Galadriel and her brother Finrod Felagund were high elves, or Eldar, of the royal house of Finarfin. Finarfin. And Galadriel...
So his name was Findor Flarfin?
Finarfin.
Wow.
Galadriel was the noblest of the high elves known as the Exiles, a branch of Eldarin kindred called the Noldor, who left Valinor to go to Middle-earth.
Mm.
And that is the end for all of our little
So we will read the Amazon Prime little fun trivia facts for you, so you don't have to worry about clicking on over all the time.
Yes, we can do that for you. That's what we nerds here are for. All right, Mary, anything else that you want to talk about?
My theory.
Oh, let's do it.
Do you have a theory?
Oh, no, that was the wrong song, Blake. Here we go. Of course I got one.
Okay, well, you go first, because I rarely have one, so I want to have my moment.
All right, so here is my theory. The kid, Justin Bieber.
Okay.
That kid.
Not Theo. Theo's friend, Justin Bieber.
Yeah. That kid, guaranteed a servant of Sauron. Guaranteed. Like, somehow, some way, like, he's trying to promote, like, hardship between the men of the Southlands and the elves, and he takes a little bit too much interest in that sword hilt. Somehow, some way, that kid is related to Sauron in one particular way. I don't know how, but that's the deal. How about you, Marvin? What do you got?
All right. I first want to note that the meteor with the guy inside.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are saying that flamey hot thing with the guy inside, it looks like Sauron's eye.
Oh, yes, it does.
I think it looks like a baby inside with all that kind of, inside a womb.
Sure, yeah. That makes sense.
Like an umbilical cord and all that kind of weird stuff. So
okay.
I don't think he's a Sauron person.
Okay, fair enough.
But here's my thought that the Harfoots are going to be demolished as a society.
Oh, whoa.
I know.
Wow. This is a hot take, Mary.
Yes.
Holy smokes.
Yes, and this is why they are no longer a people.
And, oh, I like it.
Yeah, because most of the people die, and Nori has to take the book herself. She has to take Sadok's book.
Yep.
And this is her journey, man. And then finally when she flies home, she just wants to stay put.
Interesting. All right.
I think that's why we don't have Harfoots anymore, and we have hobbits instead, because I think that they're going to be demolished.
I like it. Good take, Mary. That's a hot take right there.
Goodbye.
All right. You ready to close this bad boy out?
I sure am.
Let's do it.
We want to thank you all so much for listening to this, the premiere episode of Rings of Power with Mary and Blake. As we've said before, we are very busy podcasters who podcast from our home studio, just a mom and pop who love to connect with you. So please make sure you follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Head on over to our Facebook group. And if this podcast brings you joy, if you like what we do, you can actually support us by going to jointhenerdclan.com. You see, most podcasts that are about Rings of Power right now are actually owned by like mega conglomerates, and they have sponsors and they're fancy. Blake and I are your mom and pop shop podcast, and we are listener supported, kind of like PBS. For as little as $2 a month, you can be making a huge difference.
Yes, so go to jointhenerdclan.com to check out where you can make a huge difference and keep this podcast, among our many others, going. As a matter of fact, right now we are podcasting about House of the Dragon. Right now we are bringing back the Potterverse, which has to do with all things Harry Potter. And trust me, you don't want to miss it. Of course, also go to all of the other social media platforms that we have, whether it is Facebook or Instagram or all that other stuff. Trust me, you'll want to go there to join the conversation.
Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Mary.
My name is Blake. And you've been listening?
To Rings of Power.